Welcome to a special edition of the Dart Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, we're excited to feature the latest installment in our ongoing Women at Darden Office Hours series, hosted by Senior Assistant Dean for Admissions, Donna Clark. This conversation features Executive Fellow and Professor of Practice, Carolyn Miles, who is the former CEO of Save the Children and an alumna from Darden's full-time MBA class of 1988. As always, if this conversation is helpful for you, please like this episode and subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an update. And remember, you can always check the episode description for links to Darden blogs, social channels, and more. Now, without further ado, here's the latest installment in our ongoing Women at Darden Office Hours series featuring Executive Fellow and Professor of Practice, Carolyn Miles.
Good morning, Carolyn. Thank you so much for being here for your third appearance on the Women at Darden webinar series, and always such a great big hit. Carolyn is the former CEO of Save the Children, an organization that gives children in the United States and around the world a healthy start, the opportunity to learn, and protection from harm. The global Save the Children movement serves over 155 million children in the United States and 120 global countries. As a global organization, Save the Children has committed to driving down the numbers of preventable deaths of children under five, ensuring every child gets a high-quality basic education and, again, protects children from harm. Prior to Save the Children, she worked in the private sector in Hong Kong for American Express, and she worked as an entrepreneur. While in Asia, Carolyn confronted the deprivation of the region's children, which motivated her to dedicate her life to their welfare. In 2015, Carolyn was named one of the 50 world's greatest leaders by Fortune magazine and was inducted into the Connecticut Women's Hall of Fame. Please join me in welcoming Carolyn Miles today.
Thank you, Donna.
Carolyn, I've known you for so long. This fun fact was new to me. I did not know that you were named one of the 50 world greatest leaders. I'm so proud of you. That's amazing.
Thank you. That was quite an honor, I have to say.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is such an honor and so well deserved as well. So I want to start and give everybody some context about your background, because you have a really interesting background before you went into business. Could you tell everyone just a little bit about your background and your experience at Bucknell, what you studied at Bucknell?
Sure. So I guess, first of all, it's great to be with everybody today, with my friend Donna, but with all of you that are thinking about business school, that are already committed to coming to Darden, that are not sure. All of those good things. And I think particularly today we'll focus a lot on women and on their pathway through things like business school. I will tell you, I am a complete untraditional pathway person. So, and I know there are many, many others out there that are maybe thinking about untraditional ways of making their way through the world. So I went to Bucknell University, which is in Pennsylvania, in the middle of Pennsylvania. Same colors as Darden, so very important. Orange and blue seem to be the only colors that I'm allowed to have in my alumni wardrobe. But I was an animal behavior major at Bucknell. And I loved animals as a kid. I thought I wanted to be a vet. I actually found when working for a vet one summer that I fainted as soon as you cut skin. I have this condition that like causes you to literally like faint on the floor. So that kind of changed my trajectory.
That would call one's path.
Yes. So that changed things. But I loved my studies at undergrad. Lots of science, lots of chemistry, lots of biology, lots of science background, and I really liked it. So I said, I'm going to just keep doing this, and I'm going to see where it leads for me. And after Bucknell, I went out, and I was actually in sales for about 3 years using my chemistry background. So I was selling to manufacturing plants basic materials. for those plants. And that was super interesting. I was the first woman sales rep they ever had in the Midwest. So that was really interesting. And I had a fantastic boss. You don't always realize, I think, until later how great your bosses are, but this guy was really great in terms of it, his advice, because I was very interested in marketing and getting underneath kind of why people bought the things that they did. And that's what I found really interesting. And he said, well, you could spend the next 5 or 6 years here in our company and kind of work your way up, or you could go back to business school. And I had really not thought about business school before. And so I started doing a lot of research at that point in time. And I, thank goodness, I got into Darden and I went to Darden and had a fantastic experience. And we'll get into that, I'm sure, a little bit later. But I went to Darden and did come out in 2 years and did go into marketing for American Express. So I think one of the things, and again, we'll get into this a bit later, but business school is a great opportunity to make a pivot in your career. I made many other pivots, which we'll talk about, but that particular pivot was, I think, really important at that point for me, where I was wanting to do something related but different to what I was doing. And business school gave me the opportunity to do that. And I learned a ton of things that I had not learned in my undergrad, because mm-hmm. I was not a business major. I had no foundational marketing or finance or operations or any of those things that you get at business school. So,
yeah. And interestingly, now Bucknell has a business major, which I think is relatively new, or a management major, and which is highly unusual for a liberal arts school. And later on, I'll ask you a little bit. I know you sit on the board for Bucknell as well.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about what led you to Darden specifically?
Sure. I think, so as I said, I wasn't really thinking too much about business school. It's not like I had done a lot of research up till my deciding that this was something I was interested in. There were two things that really swayed me, I think, in terms of Darden. And now that I'm back as faculty, I can tell you these are so intertwined into what Darden's all about. The first was the way in which you learn at Darden. So the case method for me was really a great example of a way in which, for me, learning is more experiential and more discussion-based. And I remember things much better in that way. And I think I really learn in that way, in a much better way, in a much more positive way than I do through lecture. So case method was absolutely the one of the key critical pieces. The other was this idea of community. And I think Darden, part of it is driven by the way you learn at Darden, and the fact that, sorry, that was my dog. The fact that you really are immersed in the experience. And so I think that is so, so important. And so I think that was really, really critical, the whole kind of community building piece. So hang on.
Sure. No problem. I mean, for those of us who have pets at home, we understand. I think Carolyn's dog wants to say hello to everyone. We'll get into this in a little while, but after many years out in the workforce to save the children, Carolyn did come back to Darden as a professor of practice.
FedEx, ma'am.
Yeah, sure. A little bit about what we're going to get into in a little while. Right. I think a lot of us have pets that want to say hello sometimes.
or bark at the FedEx man.
Yeah, I guess that too. Okay. So you were talking about the case method.
Yes.
And from the perspective of having experienced it, but now also as a professor of practice.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the case method is so good at, and you'll hear people talk about this, is giving people the opportunity to really find their voice and to be able to get across their ideas in a much more impactful way, I would say. And it gives you a ton of practice in doing that, I mean, most people who come to Darden have worked for a couple of years. So I had worked for 3 years before I came to Darden. I think the average is like four and a half. It's gotten a little bit longer, I think, in the past couple of years. But it really is about taking those experiences that you have experienced and inserting them into the conversation and learning from all of your classmates. That's really what the case method is so good at doing. And it really does help you, as I said, find your voice and be able to talk about your ideas, even if your ideas are not always, you know, the exact right answer. What happens in a classroom at Darden is that you are building a conversation and you're building a theory of kind of what would you do in this particular situation, or what are some of the things that you need to think about in terms of this business situation. And that, I think, is really super important for anybody in business to be able to hone those kinds of skills. And that's a lot of what happens. I think it's, for me, it was a particularly good experience because, again, I didn't have a lot of background in business and I was able to learn a lot, but I also felt like I had something to contribute in the classroom because my experience that I did have, I think, was relevant in a lot of classes. And I could ask a lot of good questions and I could understand and learn from, you know, all of the people in the class, not just the professor, which is, I think, quite different from a lot of other business schools, is that you are really learning from, you know, there's 65 people in the room in your core classes, you are learning from all of them. And the professor, you're learning from the professor as well, but really it's the professor's skill in kind of guiding that conversation to the right discussions that is so important.
Well, I'm so appreciative of you sharing that story because so many people who apply to Darden do not have a traditional background, and such a great example of making that transition into business. You also mentioned one of the reasons that drew you to Darden was the community. And Darden is so well known for the strength of the community. Can you talk a little bit about what your favorite elements of the community were as a student and are now? Let me tell everybody a little bit about your path because I'm skipping over my head. After Save the Children, our Dean Scott Beardsley very wisely reached out to Carolyn to see if she would come back to Darden as a professor of practice. And I am going to ask her some questions and we'll get into that. And then she became the interim president of the Darden School Foundation and made a considerable impact there. So she has experienced Darden both as a student, alumna, and as a current member of the community. So since you did mention community, if you can just elaborate a little bit on your experience with the Darden community and all of those different facets that you've played.
Sure. Well, I think some of my favorite parts of the community, and a lot of this still exists today, they're named different things, but they still exist. So one of the things that's unique about Darden, again, is the building of the community really from the get-go. And a lot of that happens through what are now called learning teams. They used to be called study groups when I was at Darden, but they're the same thing. And it is five or six people that are assigned. So you don't go out and find your study group or your learning team. You are assigned to a learning team. And they're put together in a way that they're trying, really, Darden is trying to put together people with a wide variety of experiences. But you spend a lot of time with that group of people on preparing for class. And I think that builds right away, that builds community. And I think that is really, really important. It also gives you this small group of people that you get to know well quickly. And then within your sections, the other thing that's, again, still very much exists today at Darden is that each of the sections, there's a lot of community that's built in that section. Those students are students that you are with for the most of your first year, you are with that section. And that's a group of 65 people. So again, you're kind of starting with six, and then you're going to 65, and then your class is, you know, 300 or so, 350. But you're building out those circles. And I think those are still memories of people that I still keep in touch with. You know, we still, when we go back for reunions, we talk about what section we were in. There's something called the Darden Cup, which is competition between the sections, which is all sorts of things. I mean, it's both sports, but it's also all sorts of game nights and lots of things that you can do with your section. And I think that's, those are ways to build community. The other thing I would say, and this has really expanded, I think, beyond what used to exist at Darden, is there are so many clubs student run, and much of Darden is run by students. So that's important to know. Certainly all the clubs are student run. So there are, I don't know, at this point, probably close to 100 different student clubs. You might know, Donna, the answer, but there are a lot of student clubs. Pretty much anything you are interested in, from hiking to, you know, bowling to making beer to sustainability to, there is a club, I think, for everybody. That is another way to build community. So there's just a lot of ways to do that. I think at the heart of it, the way in which Darden works and the way in which you learn at Darden is actually the foundation of community, because you are in a classroom, you are interacting with the professor and with those classmates every single day that you're at Darden. And that is really the foundation, I would say, for building community.
Yeah, really reiterating what you said about the magnitude of clubs, industry clubs, career clubs, general interest clubs, affinity clubs. And one of the things I love about Darden is that they reserve funding for students who want to start a new club. And so it's kind of interesting sometimes to see some of the clubs go by the wayside and new ones, or it's a new aviation club a few years ago. So it's nice that there's some malleability for students to form new clubs too. And everyone, I am going to toggle between the questions I have for Carolyn and Q&A. So feel free to put some questions in the Q&A, and I'll integrate your questions into our questions for Carolyn today. Well, I'm going to transition a little bit to after Darden. You have such a fascinating global background. Can you share more about your path after graduating from Darden?
Sure. So as I mentioned, I really wanted to do marketing. So my first job out of Darden was to go to American Express in New York. I got married right after Darden. I married a Darden guy. Who I met like the first day of Darden. So worked for American Express. We were both working in New York, and Amex had a program where they basically took five people in a year, and they took five people from New York and they moved you to somewhere around the world, and they brought five people in from somewhere around the world. And they didn't really tell you where you were going to go. They just said, were you interested in this global program? And so I was definitely interested. I talked to my husband. He was like, where are we going to go? I said, I have no idea. He said, okay. So I threw my name in the hat, and we ended up in Hong Kong, which was a great place to be, I have to say. This was back in 1991. So it was before the handover actually to China. Hong Kong was a really growing financial center, and I was going to go work for a big, you know, financial services firm. So it was great. And I did that for about 3 years. I had two children in those 3 years in Hong Kong. So I found out I was pregnant about a week before we left for Hong Kong with the first one, which was a little bit of a surprise, but it all worked out great. And so had two of our three kids while we were there, and loved working for American Express. Great job. It was marketing. It was actually I first worked on the credit card side. I was working on the establishment side in Hong Kong, developed a new frequent flyer program, the first one ever for Asia. That was super fun. But after having my second son, I decided I really needed a job that was not quite so much travel. I was traveling all over the region, traveling all over Asia. So I hooked up with a Darden classmate, and he had just opened a new coffee store in Hong Kong where everyone drinks tea. And he said, hey, I'm really going to try to make this go. He was from Seattle. Really going to try to make this go. And I want you to come and join me as the marketing person. Now, there were only two of us. So I knew that it wasn't just going to be marketing. And of course, it wasn't. It was like everything. But super fun experience. It's called Pacific Coffee Company. You can look it up. We sold it now probably 15 years ago to a Chinese investor. It's all over China. But at the time, it was all about how quickly can we build this thing before Starbucks comes to Hong Kong. And so that was our objective. And it did that and just had a fantastic experience as an entrepreneur. Didn't have to travel regionally, but I did work all sorts of strange hours, doing all sorts of interesting things in a startup, which was great.
Wow, so interesting. So you had a little bit of a first mover advantage over Starbucks, which
we did. Is
amazing.
We did. And if you live in Hong Kong or in China, you probably know Pacific Coffee Company. It's kind of everywhere in those two places. So that was a great experience. But I also, during our time in Asia, we did a lot of traveling. We traveled with our two little kids and traveled to a lot of places where you met children. We were off the beaten path. And I think for me, this recognition that children that we met in many developing countries in Asia just had no opportunities. They were not going to go beyond where we were seeing them in very poor situations and very poor environments. And it was only because of who they were born to. It wasn't because they didn't have the potential. It wasn't because they couldn't have done things differently. There just were no opportunities for kids. And so that was actually what led me to start thinking about the nonprofit space. I did some volunteer work in Hong Kong for about a year or two before we came back. We came back after 5 years, right before the handover. So we came back in 97. The handover was in 98. We came back in 96. The handover was 97. And I really decided I wanted to do nonprofit work. I didn't know a lot about nonprofits, but I did some research. It was also another Darden connection. And this is something about my career. Every step of the way, there's a Darden connection. In terms of my changes, there was one at American Express when I started there, Pacific Coffee Company, and then Save the Children. Somebody I didn't even know who was a Darden grad a couple of years above me, and he offered to introduce me to people at Save the Children and UNICEF and a couple other organizations that he knew. And that was how I started my career at Save the Children.
Yeah. And then you tell everybody a little bit about your chronology at Save the Children, because you were there for a considerable amount of time before you became president and CEO of the world's, isn't Save the Children the world's leading children-focused NGO?
Yes.
If you could tell everybody a little bit about your, the arc of your roles, plural, at Save the Children. And also, sure. I'm really interested in how Darden prepared you once you became president and CEO. How did Darden prepare you for that?
Well, and I would say that Darden prepared me for all of the roles in terms of my career. Mm-hmm. But I came into Save the Children in a kind of mid-level marketing-oriented job. So one of the things that's really important, I think, in any job change, but particularly if you're going from the for-profit to the nonprofit world, is that you have very relevant skills. And I had a very relevant set of skills from my work at American Express and at Pacific Coffee Company on the marketing side. And I was brought in to bring in new entry-level donors into Save the Children. And so it was the beginning of the internet. And so Save the Children was really excited because we like got a web page up and they thought that was like unbelievable. And I was like, well, it's just a web page with like a phone number on it. But anyway, there were definitely skills that were very relevant that I could bring, both from, I did a lot of television advertising stuff at Amex. I did direct mail, a lot of things that were relevant to Save the Children. So I came in that first job. I honestly thought I would stay at Save the Children for a couple of years. I had two young children. We adopted a third child. I thought I'll be here for a couple of years and then I'll go back to the corporate world. And so I did that entry-level marketing job. I was very quickly kind of promoted up through the ranks. I became the COO after about 6 years at Save, and I did that for 7 years, and then I became the CEO. So I think one of the things that you learn, and that certainly I learned, is my Darden experience was super, super helpful in understanding and having that broad business background that I talked about, you know, understanding operations and logistics, which for Save the Children is very important, understanding finances and really being able to read a balance sheet and be able to understand kind of what's happening with our budgets and what, you know, how is that going? Very, very important, the leadership and organizational behavior work at Darden. You know, Save the Children, it's all about people. It's all about the mission of the organization and motivating people with the mission and really understanding what is making people get up in the morning and do their jobs. The only way that Save the Children makes a difference for kids around the world is with people. And it's the people that work there and they're the ones who make things happen. And so to be able to inspire and motivate people, super, super important in an organization like that. And there is a lot of that kind of learning at Darden. So I did end up being at Darden or at Save the Children for 22 years. So, and then I retired in 2020 as the CEO.
Congratulations. Can you give, I've heard you tell some really fascinating stories. I mean, you are extremely well-traveled and went with Save the Children during a number of global crises and natural disasters. Can you maybe give a couple of examples of situations that you immersed yourself in that maybe you're particularly proud of or that, you know, were really impactful?
Sure. And I actually teach a couple of cases on Save the Children at Darden as part of kind of get some guest lecturing that I do and some of my courses. But I guess there's a couple, excuse me, that stand out. One is the tsunami. So the tsunami that happened, which was probably the biggest kind of global disaster. I'm sure many of the people on the phone were either not born or were children, for sure.
I remember it.
Yeah, but it was the day after Christmas. It was just a major, major disaster that affected many, many countries. And Save the Children was really, really engaged. And this is where that I talked about logistics, and in an emergency response like that, logistics and operations are probably one of the most important things that happens right away. You have to get people and supplies and all sorts of things into a disaster area from wherever is the best place to get them from. And so that, I would say that was a turning point for Save the Children and many NGOs in how you managed a humanitarian disaster, because the scale of it was so enormous and the number of people affected was so enormous and the difficulty of getting supplies and people to the places that needed them was so enormous. It really kind of revolutionized the way that happened. So that was one. The other was probably... There were many, but one other was the Ebola crisis. And I think about that, and that was in West Africa. And I think about that as a precursor really to COVID. It was a big, you know, again, it was very far away. So for a lot of Americans, it wasn't as relevant.
Right.
but it was a really big, from a health standpoint, it was one of the first kind of major health crises, and learning how to do that. And again, Save the Children's role in doing that. There was a ton of things that Save did on protecting children. There were many children who lost their parents. There was a whole program of taking care of those kids. But a lot of it was about education and how you educate people about these kinds of health crises. So those are two that kind of stand out. But I have been, I think, to 94 countries, most of them with Save the Children. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. And there's so many, just like sort of along that line, those lines, and building your global skills, so many opportunities to do that at Darden. I just saw that they announced the fall and spring March Darden Worldwide courses. Everybody who comes to Darden gets a scholarship to go on a Darden Worldwide course, so you can begin to build these global skills. Or enhance your global skills as Darden students. There's a question in the chat going back to, you have, you know, three children, and Varsha has asked, hi, Carolyn, how was your journey as a working woman and mother? As a woman myself, I also wonder about motherhood penalty as myth versus fact. Any words of wisdom?
I think, so I would say a couple things. Thank you for your question. I think everybody, first of all, has to answer these questions for themselves. Everybody is going to approach it somewhat differently. For me, it was important that I did want to have children. I really, obviously the work that I've done has been focused on children. I really wanted to have my own children. I also wanted to dedicate myself to helping other kids. And so it is always this balance, I would say. And for me, it was definitely a balance of doing the best job that I could while at the same time spending time with my family. I would tell you that one of the things that I think is so important is choosing your spouse. And that is really critical. And my husband was one of 10 children. He changed more diapers than I had when I met him already.
Wow.
So, but you know, and I did ask him if he wanted to have 10 children when I first like started dating him. And he said no, which was good. So I think, you know, one of the things that's important is that you and your partner, you know, are on the same page. Mm-hmm. Obviously now you can also have children on your own. And I have a lot of friends who have done that, either through adoption or, you know, other means. And I think you need to always be in a position where you say, I know kind of where my boundaries are, and I know when I'm gonna, you know, when I'm gonna need to do something different for my kids and my family. I tell you, it never ends. I just spent last week with my 21-year-old daughter, taking her back to school after she had emergency gallbladder surgery over our spring break. So it doesn't end. It just continues. But I think making sure that you understand that there are going to be sacrifices actually on both sides. Mm-hmm. You're going to have sacrifices sometimes that you make for your family. You're going to have sacrifices that you make for your work. And you kind of have to get to a point where you're okay with that. And, or at least for me, that was the way that it was. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really important thing to come to grips with. And as I said, you need to also be on the same page as your spouse if you're going to have children with someone else.
Yeah, that's such good advice. Can you talk a little bit about what prompted you to come back to Darden? And for everyone, Carolyn did come back as a professor of practice. Good move on the part of our dean, teaching managing sustainability from the inside out, a CEO leadership course. I mean, what a gift to Darden students to have you back in the classroom. I've heard just such great feedback. But can you talk a little bit about what prompted you to come back and what that experience has been like for you?
Sure. So, you know, I think all of the changes that you're going to experience in your careers are driven by kind of a combination of personal and professional things. For me, on the personal side, So I very sadly lost my husband in 2021 from brain cancer. So I had already decided I was going to leave Save the Children probably after 10 years. I left a little earlier because he became really sick and I wanted to spend time with him. Mm-hmm. So during that time that I was taking care of Brendan, my husband, I had known Scott for a long time. I'd been on the board for 12 years at Darden. So I knew Darden. I was very connected to Darden. And we started talking about different options. And I said, well, you know, there's a couple things that I think I could add value in terms of Darden, which for me is always important. Can you add value to what you might do next? And I said, I think there's some things I can add value. I think there's a couple things that I'd be passionate about doing at Darden, one of which is increasing the number of women that come to Darden and the increase in the diversity of people that come to Darden. So I said, I want to work on that. And from a teaching standpoint, there's a couple of things that where I thought I could add value. Sustainability, one of the things that I'd seen probably in the last 10 years that I worked at Save the Children was that particularly when it comes to social inequality and climate change, the people who are most affected by those issues are actually the poorest people in the world. You and I and all of us on this call, yes, we're going to be affected, but really the poorest people who live in the most marginalized places, who don't have very much cushion against disasters, who can't really move because of climate, all those kinds of things, they're the ones who will suffer the most. So I really am interested in sustainability from a global perspective. And my premise was that we could do a lot, Darden can do a lot to impact sustainability by getting students to understand what sustainability is all about and how to affect it inside of a company. So this course that I developed called Managing Sustainability from the Inside Out is really looking at how do you, from a corporate perspective, develop a sustainability plan and how does that happen and what does that look like? I've been consulting for the last 4 years with Bayer, which is a big German company, on this very question. So a lot of this ideas for this course came up through that work. So sustainability was one thing. CEO leadership, I felt like I had some good experience as a CEO that I could work with the dean on this course on CEO leadership. And then the other thing I really wanted to do, you mentioned the Darden Worldwide courses. I really wanted to lead some of those courses. So I did a sustainability focused course, both in Costa Rica, which is an example of a country that's done a huge amount on sustainability. And then last year we did Vietnam, which is a low middle income country that's really challenged by trying to be sustainable as they grow at 6 or 7% a year. So those were the things that I really wanted to do. I was really, you know, I think very lucky to be able to put together this portfolio of things and bring it back to Darden. And that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years with the interim president of the foundation kind of last year as a little break in the faculty action.
Yeah. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. I'm going to try to integrate.
Yeah. Take some more questions.
From Yeah. Please. From Ahana. Thank you for your question. What do you see as the biggest challenges and opportunities for women in leadership positions within the business sector, and how can Darden help address these? And it may be related. I'm going to sort of integrate. You were a very integral part of the Women at Darden initiative. And I was wondering if you can also share a little bit about the Women at Darden initiative as it does relate to Ahana's question.
Sure. So I guess I'll start with my theory, which is that the more women we have in higher leadership positions in business, the better things will be for women in business. And so that is part of my premise, which is why I think it's so important to get more women into business school. I think it's something like 40% of CEOs in Fortune 500 companies have an MBA. That percentage that's women is still quite low. So we just need to get more women kind of into business and able to participate and become leaders in business. That's my theory. And Women at Darden is really meant to help women be successful at Darden. Mm-hmm. That's how I would encompass all of the efforts that we have. Some of them are about the classroom. Some of them are about how we recruit women. Some of them are about how we open the kind of the funnel on admissions in terms of getting more women to think about business school. Some of them are about the experiences when they're here, and some are about kind of their job, you know, what happens mm-hmm. after they leave Darden. But that is all around how we help women be more successful in business. And I think the challenges that women still have, and it was the same as when I was kind of going through my career as well, is the balancing of career and family. I think that is still a challenge. I think that, again, my theory is that the more women who are in higher levels of management, the better off that will be, and the more understanding that people will have about what those challenges are. I do think there's more flexibility now, certainly in the workplace, than there has been. I think that is totally different, certainly, than when I was going through my career, when, you know, you were expected to be in the office 5 days a week, you know, 9 a.m. till 5 or 6 p.m, and that was the expectation. I think that expectation has really changed, and I think that's a very good thing. I still think it's challenging for women to kind of do that balancing piece. I still think the numbers are not where they need to be in terms of higher management. It still is a situation where you're going to walk into some rooms where, you know, there will be few women in the room, and that has to change. Mm-hmm. And I think it is changing, but it's mm-hmm. not changing fast enough in my mind.
So. Well, we appreciate all that you've done, all the energy and time and expertise you have put into helping Darden elevate these, you know, resources for women and initiatives for women. There is a request in the chat. Yeah. Would you for you to please lead a DWC to Iceland to understand the green power economy there as part of the Darden Worldwide course? And just an FYI, yeah. Ron Wilcox did lead a DWC, one Correct. Of our marketing professors, to Iceland, and with a focus on renewable energy. But anyway, just thought, you know, there's another opportunity for you too.
And I love Iceland. So maybe that goes on my list.
Yeah, that's right. Can you tell everybody about your recent role and very impactful role as interim president of the Darden School Foundation? And many people may not even know what the Darden Foundation is. So let's start with that.
Yeah. So the Darden Foundation is a standalone organization that exists to support the Darden School. And it does really three major things. It manages the endowment, which is about $850 million, somewhere in there, endowment for the school. It does all the alumni relations and the donor relations, most of whom are alumni, to raise money for the school. And it does executive education and lifelong learning, so which is more for companies who are wanting to have some lifelong learning experiences at Darden. It also owns a brand new hotel called The Forum. So again, I used kind of my three criteria when I was asked if I would step in as the interim president mm-hmm. of the foundation. One is, did I think I could add some value? And my work in the nonprofit space and in managing a nonprofit entity, I thought, yes, I think I can add some value here. The second was, am I passionate about this? Is this something I'm passionate about? And obviously, I am very passionate about Darden. So I said yes. And then the third criteria I always use is, can I learn something? And I knew nothing about running a hotel or getting a hotel up and running. So I thought, well, I think I will learn a few things about that. So so given those three criteria, I said, yes, I would be happy to step in as the interim. I ended up in that role for about a year. And it was a fantastic experience. First of all, great, great people on the Darden Foundation side, some of whom I knew, some of whom I didn't know. There's about 85 people who work in the foundation, so it was a great opportunity to get to know them. We did open the new hotel on time, on budget, so that was that was really exciting and super interesting. And we were very successful in closing a capital campaign for Darden as well last year. So it was, I think, a great opportunity for me to give back to Darden in yet a different way, and to also get to know a whole bunch of people that I didn't know at Darden. Yeah. So yeah, all really good.
That's awesome. Lucky for us. Shifting gears a little bit, we've talked a lot about Darden. Can you share with the participants some of your favorite things that you take advantage of in Charlottesville or UVA? And I will preface this by, Carolyn is a friend of mine, and when she comes back for a weekend, I am amazed. She's like, we're going on a balloon ride, and then we're going on a hike, and then a brewery, and then this restaurant. So she fully takes advantage of Charlottesville. Many participants may not know much about Charlottesville. And could you enlighten them a little bit about Charlottesville and what you love to do here?
Sure. So I have to say, I loved Charlottesville when I was there as a student. But that was a very long time ago, and I think Charlottesville has really grown and really changed. There's two kind of aspects of Charlottesville that I love. One is the music piece, and there are so many great places to go visit music, you know, to go hear music, and they're just very different. There's all sorts of different venues. The Downtown Mall has this great pavilion where they have great concerts. I saw Brandi Carlile there. I've seen a couple of other really great acts there. And then there are all these small clubs. Again, a lot of them at the mall, but there's a lot of outdoor venues that are also fantastic around Charlottesville. So pretty much any day of the week, if you look up music in Charlottesville, there'll be three or four things that you could do almost any day of the week, any time of the year. So music is a fantastic part, I think, of what happens in Charlottesville. And the other part is food, which I really love. And there are so many good places to eat. I've only probably been able, even though I try every time I'm in Charlottesville to, you know, to eat out as much as I should, not more than I should. But there's so many places in Charlottesville to eat and every different cuisine. I just heard that an Ethiopian restaurant was going to open in Charlottesville soon.
Oh, I'm so excited.
We're gonna try that, Donna.
But really any
kind of cuisine that you like, any kind of from very informal to, you know, really five-star restaurants, there's just the food scene is fantastic. And in the spring and in the fall and in the summer, if you're around Charlottesville in the summer, so many outdoor activities. So I've been rafting and paddling on the Ravana, lots of hiking, lots of biking, balloon rides, as you mentioned. I mean, lots and lots of things to do. So it is a great community to do lots of fun things. But food and music is probably my favorite.
Yeah, me too. And for the participants, you may not know that Rand McNally a few years ago rated Charlottesville the number one foodie town in the country. There are 338 restaurants here. And I love that some of the longstanding restaurants that have been here for decades have survived. I mean, I don't know how all of these restaurants survive, but I think people take advantage of the great food options. And I'm thrilled to hear an Ethiopian restaurant is coming. That'll be wonderful to check out. There's a question in the chat about from the perspective of women, advice to fortify their confidence in leading. Any pearls of wisdom about maybe experiences that you went through, whether they're at Darden or elsewhere, to help build one's confidence to hold a position such as the ones that you have held in your career?
Yeah. So I did mention the kind of the Darden experience and how what you learn at Darden in terms of confidence. And I do think that that is really important to think about. If you're thinking about business school, that issue of confidence for women is super important. And I do think the case method and the way that Darden does learning really does help in terms of giving you the opportunity to express your ideas and see how it goes and practice that kind of expression of ideas. So I think that's important. I think one of the things I would say is that we sometimes, I think women do this more than men, if we don't know the exact right answer and every little piece of that answer, we won't actually put it out there. And I think that's not really the right way to think about it. I think ideas and plans of things to do and like next steps, that all is an iterative process. So putting your piece out there so that others can build on it and others can make it better, even if you're the CEO, and I found this out at Save the Children, because it is not a very hierarchical organization. So I could have an idea and people would be like, maybe we might do that. But that was good for me because it forced me to kind of say, well, here's some of the things I'm thinking about. Let's build on this and make it the right thing, because we're going to have lots of opinions on how to actually do this. Not kind of saying, this is what we're going to do and we're going to do it just like this, and that's how it's going to go. That isn't typically how things happen or how the best things happen. So having the confidence to put out, even if your idea is not fully baked, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles, you put it out there and you get into a discussion. That's the way that you get things done, honestly.
Yeah, that's such a great tip.
In the real world. So.
Yeah, great tip. There, we have quite a few international women participating in the webinar today. And there's one from Noshakare in Africa. What advice do you have specifically for international women who are thinking about Darden?
Well, a couple things I would say. One is I am thrilled to see the increase in international students at Darden. That is another big change from when I was there. And I think having international students, again, just makes the conversations that you're having in the classroom just so much better. I think one of the things that Darden tries to do is we try to give students a place and a group of people that they feel comfortable with. And a lot of our international students have groups of people that are from their country and they feel comfortable with, or maybe from their continent in the case of Africa, that they feel comfortable with. But I think what's important is that you have that group, but you go beyond that group. And one of the things that I think is sometimes hard to balance is giving people places where they feel that they belong, but also making sure that everybody feels like they belong to Darden all in. And so that, I think, is some advice I could give you is, first of all, I think Darden's a great place for international students, and there's a very vibrant international student community. But make sure that you branch out from just the community that you feel most comfortable with and get to know all of the Darden community. So.
Great. Thank you. And then final question is, what are you most excited about in the next few years that's going on at Darden?
Wow. Well, there's so many things always going on at Darden. It's hard to keep up.
It is. You know, I love that momentum around here. I know. Always. Yeah. There's always positive something. Momentum, which is fun.
Which is absolutely fantastic. So one of the things I work on at Darden is sustainability. And I am excited to see, I mean, Darden was ranked number 2 in the world on carbon neutrality. So that was fantastic. We have a whole solar powered system that helps in terms of our energy usage and the kind of energy that we use at Darden. But there's a lot to do on the sustainability side. So I'm certainly, and we have some great professors, Mike Lennox, you know, others you guys can read about who are really on the cutting edge of sustainability. So I'm really excited to see that and how that goes forward. I continue to be excited about diversity at Darden and all the diverse voices and students that we bring there. I think, you know, the whole piece about leadership and about leading in a very uncertain time. So there's a lot of investments that Darden's making in things like AI. This is probably going to be one of the things that for those that are on the phone are going to so impact your careers. And I think it's important to look at schools that are investing in those kinds of directions. And we are investing big time in artificial intelligence and what it means. And not only kind of how do you use it and what does it mean in your particular area of business, whether it's marketing or operations or finance, but really the ethical questions of AI and what is it going to mean for people. And I do think that is going to be one of the most important things that's going to impact all of the careers of everybody who's on the phone and listening today. So those are some things that I'm excited about.
Yeah, and I think it's just fantastic that our Dean, Scott Beardsley, recently took a sabbatical and did a certification program at Oxford on the ethics of artificial intelligence. So grateful to have a dean who's really fully immersing himself in this topic and the implications for business and business school too. But Carolyn, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise and pearls of wisdom with our applicants and to all the participants. Thank you so much for participating from around the world. If I can be a resource going forward, I will put my email in the chat in the Q&A before we end. And our next deadline is round 3 on Wednesday, April 3rd. We are hosting a series of events this week around the United States for round 3 applicants. And again, just really appreciate you tuning in. And everybody have a great day or evening wherever you are. And thank you so much.
Yeah. And hope to see you at Darden.
That was the latest installment in our ongoing Women at Darden Office Hours series hosted by Senior Assistant Dean for Admissions Donna Clark, featuring Executive Fellow and Professor of Practice Carolyn Miles. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, @virginia.edu. Till next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.